is a groovy party, man.
Yeah, brother,
dig it.
Solid. Right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning, young Connor. How you doing?
Doing all right.
Are you alive?
Yes. Poke him.
Kinda alive. I mean, God is good, you know.
Yeah, so, Karen, you act like someone who's reluctant to be awake.
Yeah, you know.
I've been moving all weekend. I was up till like midnight moving.
Oh, so you I'm moved?
Just, yeah,
yeah. Well,
in a new apartment.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on that. And
thank you.
Know, man. You. He's half awake.
Yeah. Which half?
The fun side.
Yeah, there we go.
The slap happy side when you get too awake and you just keep going.
Yeah. Well, good morning. And that's Sandy Williams. Hey, Sandy, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right.
How was the weekend, man?
My weekend was okay, but, you know, the Grim Reaper was out there all weekend. I opened up the paper every day, and somebody I liked and knew from movies or whatever passed away, including someone we were talking about before we went on the air.
You know, Sandy, it's over the last, I don't know. Well, and it happens, man. You know, the evil consequences of time catch up with all of us.
Mother Nature is a predator.
Yeah. And
she's after me and she's after you.
Well, and you know what? She's always going to be the winner.
Yeah.
Nobody. Nothing living. What are the big sequoias in California?
Yeah.
You know, and they say, well, they've lived for, what, 400, 500 years. They'll come to an end, too, someday, right?
Sure, the giant tortoises, all these things that live long lives, but lives are defined by the beginning and the end.
Sandy, you're sounding like the Grim Reaper.
Ooh.
We better hurry up and move off of that.
Yeah.
It's Monday morning.
I am death.
We don't want to run people away before we even get started. Connor's laughing. He's saying, what are these old guys talking about? Yeah, and I was telling Connor.
I'm laughing because Sandy just said he's death.
I am death. No, that was the meaning of Monty Python, the meaning of life, one of my favorite movies.
Oh, yeah, I've seen Monty.
Yeah.
It's good.
You know, Sandy, I wanted to talk about Bill Russell. And Bill Russell was just an icon. You know, they use the terms icon, the term icon a lot. And there are people, they say, well, they're iconic. You know, Betty White was an icon when they talked about, you know, actresses and those things, lived to be almost 99 years old. And she was still moving around, still had a reasonable portion of her mind. And so you look at those kind of people, you say they're iconic because she still was Betty White, right?
Yeah.
You know, all the way to 99 years old. And then you look at a guy like Bill Russell. And
My feeling about Bill Russell is he was always such a likable personality. You know, a guy from San Francisco State or wherever he's San Francisco University, and playing in the, I think probably started in the late 50s with Boston. And Boston's a blue collar town. They didn't, the blue collar folks there were very racist, particularly in the civil rights period. He played through all that. You know, I still to this day, I was watching replays over the weekend of interviews with Bill Russell, and he had the most contagious laugh. I mean, when he laughed, you liked him. You know, you could tell he loved life, and he was great at communicating with people. He was a great basketball player, and he was one of the first unselfish basketball players. Here was this guy who was famous, and he was never famous for scoring a lot of points. He blocked lots of shots. He was a super effective center, but he was never he never was a team in terms of like Will Chamberlain, for instance, and yet he used to get the best of Will Chamberlain as often as not.
You know, Sandy, nobody can ever, you know, I can't make a statement that I can't corroborate, but I would say that you never heard one negative thing about Bill Russell.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, throughout all of it, and he was in the public eye.
Well, and then he coached, and he was, you know, he
did. Player coach for 3 years.
Yeah.
But commentator.
Yeah.
But what it was nobody ever said negative things about that man. And with all the other things that he accomplished, the fact that in the public eye, nobody said anything bad about him at a time when the civil rights struggle and all those things was going on, and he put his basketball career on the line by publicly speaking out and joining forces with other athletes, i.e. Muhammad Ali, when Muhammad Ali did not want to go, a.k.a. Cassius Clay, did not want to go to Vietnam, and they stripped him of his title. Bill Russell, at the height of his fame, supported Cassius Clay, a.k.a. Muhammad Ali, at that time. And he wasn't alone, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and some others. But he did that. He didn't have to do it. And he spoke about those issues. And yet, it didn't stick to him. And I think it was because he was the beloved Bill Russell, right?
Well, I think everything he did seemed to personify the kind of guy, an unselfish team player, played really hard. He was a hard playing. He played defense, and he just committed himself entirely to the whole process.
Yeah.
And I think everybody loved him. I think his opponents loved him.
Well, that's true. And the other part of it, Sandy, is what he never got a lot of credit for. Well, I didn't hear people talking about it. He was a great athlete.
Yeah. Well, he was a high jumper.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, he was a high jumper, I think, but when he was going to San Francisco, I think so.
Yeah, so there's a guy, 6'9", 6'10", that's a high jumper.
Yeah.
So you put that together with basketball and a guy 6'9", 6'10", and a high jumper, and you got to get a shot over him.
Right.
You know, he blocked so many shots, Bill Russell did, but Sandy, he was just a better human being than he was an athlete. And in the end, that should be what we're measured by, right? Yeah. I mean, I think there were greater basketball players. No question, as great a basketball player as he was, when they talk about great basketball players of his era, they're going to always say Wilt Chamberlain, the guy who scored 100 points in a game, and a guy who was just so dominating because he was just such a heck of a 7'2", you know, 300-pound specimen. Wilt Chamberlain.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you look in the annals of basketball history, certainly Bill Russell with, I don't know, 8-9 championships.
He had 11 during his entire 11. Career. Yeah.
So that'll never, ever, ever, ever be repeated. So, you know, that's the kind of guy he was. And, you know, I'll always remember him because, as you stated, that infectious laugh that he had.
Yeah.
And a guy that's larger than life. But, you know, everybody, as we stated earlier, is going to have to go that route. But the thing about him is, I was listening to his daughter respond about his career. And she said that he had heaven here on earth. And so, you know, if a guy like that, and you know, and Sandy, I think he came up As a matter of fact, I'm not absolutely sure, but I'm almost would bet a dollar to a dime that he didn't come up in a family that had wealth. You know, he certainly came up during hard times and was able to do something great.
No, actually, I'm Googling him as you talk because I'm trying to figure out all of this stuff. He was born in West Monroe, Louisiana.
Yeah, so he's poor.
Yeah, he's surely born poor.
Yeah, yeah. And the fact that he was able to, you know, accomplish all the things that he accomplished is amazing. And they'll be talking about him for some time to come. You know, they don't put statues up to, you know, your average Joes. Bill Russell has earned his place in the Hall of Athletics, Hall of Fame. And, you know, and he was just a wee bit before I got to see kind of the tail end of his career. And maybe the last 6 years or so where I understood what was going on with him. But I was a fan of Wilt Chamberlain more so than I was Bill Russell. And so I would spend more time focusing on Wilt Chamberlain than I did Bill Russell. But the more I got to see him, here's a man, Sandy, who was famous for not being the greatest scorer. You know, he didn't care whether he scored a lot of points. He was able to create all of that he created, probably only averaging, I don't know, when you look it up and see how many points he averaged, he probably didn't average any more than 15, 16 points.
I think, no, it said his highest season average was 19 points.
Oh, 19 points.
So that was, you know, that was not his career average. That was the highest he ever averaged in a season. So,
right.
No, his career average was lower. No, he was all about team and defense. And yet he made the team. You know, I mean, I don't mean made the team. I mean,
no, I know what you mean.
Made the team what it was.
Yeah, and Red Auerbach knew that. You know,
he won two. San Francisco won two national championships when he was playing.
Yeah. So I mean, just the evil consequences of time. This past weekend, as always, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And you know, Sandy, I where is it at? I wanted to begin with. Oh, we already began with something else, but.
we started this show already.
Yeah. But I want to talk about this, Sandy. 19 states have joined a new right-wing effort to remake the Constitution with their fringe ideas. Now, I don't know, Sandy. I've been listening to Republicans and conservatives over the last month or so, several months, saying that Democrats hate them. And I'm like, hate you? And Republicans, why are they thinking that somebody...
Well, I think lots of people...
They want some sympathy.
Yeah, they want to achieve victim status.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think there's... I think.
What do they get out of that?
I think there's too much hate in the political process, but it's definitely a two-way street. And you know, the extent to which conservatives have vilified liberals and have essentially tried to label them as people who aren't patriotic, people who are trying to ruin America. That's the problem. There's too much hate. But I think people like. Attract people to their midst and it by becoming sympathetic victims. It's a bit the way it has played out across the world. So, you know, some extent it might be accurate, but Putin has tried to convey to the Russian people the fact that they are the victims of Western prejudice.
But how are the Republicans victims? I mean, who are they? Who are they, Sandy? Who are they looking to get to feel their pain? I mean,
well, I don't know. I think it all goes back to the Hillary Clinton ridiculous, deplorables, and the fact that I think that they their view has been one of the things that attracts, I think, people to sort of a strident conservatism is the notion that there are an elite. There's an elite group in America, and they are
conservatives.
And those elites think that that conservatives are second class citizens. That the elite are elite, and that the people who aren't elite are second class. And so being second class is something that you can get angry about. I'm not sure they're trying to attract sympathy. I think they're trying to stir up the anger of their fellow travelers.
Are there no elite conservatives? What is that definition of elite?
Elite, usually in political movements, people are painted as elite who are unlikable. You know, they're the unlikable aristocrats who have elite status without having the qualifications to be elite. Who are trying to take advantage of their situation to the detriment of the masses.
But Sandy, that's not Democrat or Republican.
I know, but it's rhetoric. It's political rhetoric, and you can definitely hear Donald Trump talks about elite. How crazy is that? Of all the people who might be actually financially elite, Donald Trump would certainly assert that he is one of them, whether he is in fact or not. The huge the mega billionaire that he claims he is, he wants to be one.
Oh, but Sandy, poor me, poor us. You know, everybody's against us. Man, come on. But anyway, 19 states have joined a new
I think that there's a very common thread to the arguments, to the speech that the coach gives in the locker room. Those guys out there think that we're nothing. Those guys out there don't realize how good we are. Those guys are talking trash about us. Let's go out there and kick their bones. Yeah. Okay, it's just a common thread for getting people whipped
fired up on their side of the issue.
Yeah.
Well, as if they don't need anything else. But these 19 states, Sandy. They want to remake the Constitution, and
it's interesting because one of the things that the conservatives talk about is protecting our great Constitution, and now they want to rewrite it.
You know, Sandy, you're getting ahead of the game, but that's exactly it. It's what drew me to this. It's nonstop the great Constitution, the founding fathers. We don't want anybody to mess with it but us. The next step for the right wing is a plot to change the U.S. Constitution to make it significantly more conservative by creating a constitutional convention among red states. So, Sandy, let's talk a little bit about the possibilities in 2022-2024 of a constitutional convention.
This is the kind of stuff, last week when I was talking about the possible fragmentation of the country, I mean, if you get a polarized political process, and if one of those poles grabs a hold of something like the Constitution, for instance, and makes it essentially unbearable, right, creates a Constitution that a substantial number of people think they can't live within, you start developing a sound rationale for breaking up. So, you know, I think that's the problem. That's the problem with the Supreme Court that's going to erode many of the principles of government, like the importance of precedent, the importance of consistency. Things that rock the society materially can rock society enough to break it up. And particularly when you have such a geographic coalescence of political views, urbanized states are blue, non-urbanized states are red. You begin to see a geographic divide, and you can paint the country blue and red quite clearly. You take the coasts, they're blue. The east and west coasts are blue. The couple of spots in the center are blue. Everything else is red.
So you're saying this could not be so far-fetched. The idea, I mean...
Well, you've got 36, 35, 32. It's well over 30 state houses that are controlled by Republicans. State houses are where you get the constitutional convention process started.
All right. Got to go to a break. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
An overnight low of 55 degrees. You're listening to the Shaw 101 FM WAUK 540 AM.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And what is hip? We used to use that terminology, what is hip?
What is hip?
No, it's certainly, well, what is hip is certainly not the conservatives looking to... for a constitutional convention.
No.
You know, before we went to break, 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. You two can join us. You know, Sandy, this article talks about ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council Policy Summit. Rick Santorum explained that he and his allies want to remake the U.S. into a solidly conservative nation. Insider conducted interviews with a dozen people involved in the Constitutional Convention movement, revealing just how well-funded it is, partially through cryptocurrency. This isn't an exercise either. State lawmakers are invited to huddle in Denver starting on Sunday to learn more about the inner workings of a possible constitutional convention. And this is the third installment. The conservatives' aim is to change constitutions so that it would eliminate national education requirements, making it harder for any territory to garner statehood, eliminate many federal environmental standards, and make it difficult or impossible for someone like Anthony Fauci to ever work for decades within the government.
They're going to make Anthony Fauci a constitutional issue.
While Santorum is one of the supporters, the other ones are strong MAGA activists like Ron DeSantis, John Eastman, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin. These are flamethrowers, right?
Yeah.
I mean, these
are people like Steve Bannon's probably behind it, too. These people understand how to tweak the public consciousness to get it to get conservatives all riled up. I don't think that they have any concept of what the whole, when they get them all riled up, if they try to create a consistent whole out of all the theories that they present to the public to rile them up, how does that that doesn't become a consistent whole? You know, states' rights and a powerful presidency, those don't
contradict
really,
one another.
They kind of contradict one another. Installing an autocrat to get rid of a government you don't like is like, wow. You know, and unfortunately, that has been the history in the past. When there's foment in a country, a populist foment in the country, and the people want to gain back power, the most common outcome of that is a dictator. And the people don't gain back their power; they lose all their power. That's one of the magical aspects of the American democracy. Whether we think we're working well or not now, and I would say that we've got lots of work to do to make our democracy work a lot better than it's now working. It's at least a situation like the parliamentary governments in which we have not slid into autocracy.
You know, Sandy, many of the average Joe conservatives don't know. They don't realize that at the end of all of these conversations that are being had, that these flamethrowers really don't include them in all of the things that they're talking about.
Apparently these flamethrowers don't love the Constitution as much as they say. It's not exactly what they want. They want to change it. And, you know, it sounds like what they want to do is enact a bunch of legislation of the sort they'd like and put it in the Constitution where it's far harder to change. You know, the magic of the Constitution was that it was not legislative in nature. It was broad, setting standards for a government to operate within, but not setting legislative kinds of restrictions down. That was to be done later, pursuant to constitutional legislation. I don't get it. I think that the conservative movement seems to be a pack of dogs chasing cars, and they don't know, they won't know what to do when they catch the cars. It's a movement that needs to be kept whipped up at Trump rallies, where they can all leave in an excited state. But if they were all to settle down for a couple of months and think about all the things that they've all gotten whipped up about at this rally, they'd realize that they don't hang together. It's not a consistent thread.
You know, Sandy, and at the end of it, it's not going to be the pot of gold for the average everyday American. It's just not. I mean, they're not. They claim to be speaking for the little guy that's hurting. But then you look at situations like, right now, they're pushing against everything that right now this new Build Back Better plan, which is really for the average guy. I mean, in most instances, that's what's in it. Mm-hmm. Not enough, but at least there's some meat on the bones for the average guy. And yet the Republicans are pushing against that totally.
Well, you think about a constitutional, what you mentioned that Alec was looking, this group was looking at, making it harder for a territory to become a state. Well, all they could possibly be worried about there is Puerto Rico. And the reason they would be worried about Puerto Rico is they probably think it's likely to be a Democratic state. So let's not let that happen. You know, if there was a district or that they thought was going to become Republican, I suspect they'd want it to be easier.
You know, Sandy, I'm not, again, you look at things that are happening with the Democratic Party, and it's nothing, you know, to smile about either. I mean, there's clearly some issues. But even with the issues from the Democratic side of things aren't as draconian as what I don't know what's in their heads, man.
Well, Republicans, to me, this is all representative of a group that can feel their influence slipping away. This is reactionaryism. The word reactionary means people who are reacting to their loss of power. And what we have in the Republican Party now is clearly reactionary kinds of theories, ways to hold on to power that is otherwise going to slip away from them. So they've got strategies. Let's make it harder to vote. You know, like I was saying last week, the only thing wrong with this last election, as far as the conservatives was concerned, is that too many of those people voted. And what they're all about is trying to restrict the ability of those people to vote. Well, those people are the ones who they foresee as taking their grip on power away from them. And so that's what this constitutional convention is all about, too, is trying to make it, put it into the Constitution where it's much harder to change than legislation, things that will enable the people in control now to hold on to that power, even though they can see that the trends, you know, the freight train that's moving is going to take that power away from them. That kind of reaction is called reactionary.
You know, Sandy, and they're saying their plan is that they hope that they can make this happen in the next 24 months.
Well, that's because the power, it's urgent. Reaction. Yeah. Part of reactionaryism is that it is carried out with a sense of urgency, because those who are reactionary have a feeling that the power that they have that's going to be torn from them or taken away from them is going to happen rather quickly. They can see the writing on the wall. People who are reactionaries are people who see the writing on the wall and want to make sure that they can make it so it doesn't come true for as long as possible. They're trying to stop the freight train.
You know, Sandy, and they're kind of like sheeple, right? I mean, they give up their own thought and they just follow these leaders that they have, but they've always had conservative leaders. You know, it's nothing new. It's just that their whole
ever since the founding fathers, there's always this battle between landholders and non-landholders, and the Constitutional Convention and the debate around the Constitution had a lot to do with that tension between people who own land, landholders, and non-landholders.
Yeah. All right, got to go to break. Gary, hang on. I see you. We'll come to you on the other side. 844-967-2789 is Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, it's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And we were talking about an article in today's Raw Story, talking about 19 states have joined a new right-wing effort to remake the Constitution. And let's go again, and this is the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC. Let's go to Gary from Sussex. Good morning, Gary. What's going on, man?
Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. I love listening to you. I learn a lot. Now, I'm not saying I agree with you, but I like listening. You're very, very calm when you talk, and I really like that. You got a voice for radio. I don't know if you have a face for television or radio, but you got the right voice, you know.
The right demeanor.
Yes.
What do you
Earl,
say?
I do know Earl. I've seen Earl. Yeah, he has a face for TV.
Hey, so I don't have the right demeanor, man?
No, no, you do. You've got a great demeanor, but Sandy keeps it calm. You know, he really does.
Yeah, he does. Go ahead.
But the thing is, you know, Sandy's talking like he's an expert on knowing how conservative Republicans are. he's off the track by just a little bit, you know. First of all, I want everybody who is a citizen in this country to vote, and I want to make it as easy as possible. we're not trying, conservatives are not trying to keep people from voting. It's just we just want the right people to vote.
Do you not want to vote?
I said we want everybody to vote if they're a citizen, you know, and if they're handicapped, yeah, we got to make it easy for them. But the fact is, you got to get out and vote. We've been doing this for hundreds of years, and just because in 2020 they had this mail-in thing and half the people voted early and everything else, well, you know, it's got to be right. Wait,
Gary, let me just ask you. I'll ask you calmly with my radio, radio face and my radio mouth. Why do you think that the people who mailed in their votes weren't the right people to vote? What was wrong with them in voting?
I have no idea who cheated and who didn't cheat. Well, I'm not one of those conspiracy theories,
yeah.
Persons on the right wing that think that you guys all cheated and that's how you won the vote. I don't think that.
Yeah.
Okay. But there is possibilities of cheating, like that guy down in Racine did. He went out there and cheated, and I hope he gets prosecuted for it. I really do. You can't make a point and go out there and take the sheriff's vote or whoever else he was trying to take. That guy's a nutcase.
Yeah,
and he should be prosecuted.
Okay, so Gary. So you're what you're saying is, as far as you know, there's no evidence that there was cheating. All you know is that with mail-in voting, it seems like it would be possible to have cheating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And you do know that there was lots of auditing and things that was done that have been done through courts in many states with audits, and that so far they've uncovered no consistent thread of cheating. Well, in fact, as far as I know, they would have reported every case of cheating they found, and they haven't found many at all.
Okay, I'm not saying that the Democrats did cheat. I said there's a possibility of cheating by having drop boxes and stuff like that. And
yeah, I understand,
like
but part of what Trump and the denial, the election deniers have done is to take this notion of the possibility of cheating and have turned it into a fact statement that there was cheating and that the election was stolen from Donald Trump. And that whole election.
Donald Trump is.
And that's stolen. Yeah, go ahead.
That's what, Sandy, every rally he goes to, he's just shooting himself in the foot every single time he goes out there and says that. No, what I want to hear from Donald Trump is that I want to make America great again, like it was when he was president. As far as I'm concerned, I thought the economy was great. I really did. I thought it was really, really good up until the pandemic and then the last.
Hey Gary, wasn't the economy great or good with Obama?
The day that Donald Trump got elected, the very day the stock market crashed, I think 300 and 400 points the day he got elected, or the next day. And then since then, it just went crazy.
Yeah, but
you know, I had a lot of money in stocks, and I made a lot of money after Donald Trump
Gary, you didn't make a lot of money. From the time that President Obama came in and the Dow Jones was at was at 7,000 and whatever it was, and then when he left it was at 18,000. You didn't make a lot of money in between that.
I made money, but I made a lot of money under Donald Trump.
But you know, when we talk about the economy and we talk about people participating in the wealth in the economy, you understand, Gary, that you aren't average. You've just revealed that fact by the fact that you've indicated you made a lot of money in the stock market, and you understand that the median person in the United States essentially owns no stock directly at all. They might indirectly own some stock through a pension arrangement, and so. You understand that the stock market doesn't behave in the same manner that the economy does. Do you know what the Dow Jones did last week?
I My wife told me it's at was at 33,000.
The Dow Jones went up materially last week, and it went up materially last week, even though the country and the news media was talking about the fact that we were going into recession.
Right.
And that's because the stock market reflects things different than the economy. It reflects a long-term view of things. And the fact is that the stock market, the main reason the stock market did very well on a continuing basis from Obama through Trump was the low interest rates. And the very low interest rates caused earnings in corporations to be magnified in terms of how they would be viewed for the value of the stock. And it's been the increase in interest rates which has put a dent in the stock market most recently. And that's just sort of what economists say. That's what the financial industry would tell you about the most important aspects of what's impacted the stock market. The Tax Reduction Act that was passed during Trump definitely had an impact on the stock market, but it did not have an impact on Tom, Dick, and Mary's employment. It did have a huge impact on the deficit that was experienced by the U.S. By the United States government, because that Tax Reduction Act reduced revenues materially, even during a boom. So we had a $1 trillion deficit the year after that tax reduction was enacted.
Can I ask you one other question? Once it's a little bit off the track, but I guess was last week Ron Johnson voted against helping the service people with extra benefits and stuff like that. But from what I looked at, I thought, why would he vote against it? Well, the first vote was something like 87% of everybody voted, almost all the Republicans, and then they changed it on the second vote or something like that. And then all the Republicans, all of them voted, literally, I guess, all of them voted against it. And then Chuck Schumer also did some vote against it also. What happened? Why was it that everybody was for it, or most of the people, 87%, and then all of a sudden the Republicans decided to shut the door and
my understanding is that the Republicans were angry. They said that this, at least, that they were angry with Chuck Schumer because Schumer and Manchin had not revealed to the Republican caucus the fact that Schumer and Manchin had reached an agreement on the what was then called the Build Back Better, and now I think it's called the Reduce Inflation Act, and that they had reached an agreement that was going to get it passed with all Democratic votes and would be outside the reach of the filibuster. And so the Republicans were angry about that. They thought that they were that because they had been shielded from that information, they were they decided to penalize Schumer by voting against this bill. And that was the reason why they were fist bumping and otherwise celebrating at the end of the vote against it, because they thought that they had dealt a nasty blow to Schumer and the Democrats by doing it.
Well, thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah. Okay.
See ya.
Yep. See ya.
Well, you know, Sandy, I'll say this, Gary, we were going to talk about that later on anyway. Whatever the rationale was for it, we've got some veteran friends and many veterans who don't buy that, right?
Well, I think the rationale was without regard to the veterans. It was all about inside Washington politics, and it was a demonstration that they're just out of touch.
Well, yes, and so Gary, Johnson, he's gone, and the others who have done this have angered veterans, the people they claim that they love. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back.